Good morning. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me opportunity to tell you about our work on optical spectroscopy of twisted bilayer graphene. I would like to thank the organizers for putting together this fantastic workshop. I really enjoyed hearing from Alan, the theorist who has started for this, and from all experimentalists yesterday and today. So now, a lot of the discussion was about superconductivity, and optical experiments have one particular important contribution to our understanding of superconductivity. Optical experiments allow us to measure the superfluid density. So in fact, you can determine the superfluid density without relying on any models or on any assumptions. You just read the number from some rules that are always valid because they are based on philosophical arguments like conservation of charge. And in fact, you read not just one single number, you read three different numbers for three components of the superfluid density tensor. And this is valuable. And in fact, Alan, in his talk, challenged us all to start using more and more spectroscopy in our attempts to learn about twisted bilayer graphene. But these experiments are very, very difficult for two reasons, at least. First of all, the samples that we study are very small. So we are talking about a few microns. And in order to probe the superfluid density, you have to go into terahertz range, where the wavelength of light is maybe several hundreds of microns. This is one complication. The other complication is that these samples of bilayer graphene, they are fundamentally inhomogeneous for intrinsic reasons. And this is an actual image of conducting channels in the bilayer graphene. So you have very, very different properties, spatially dependent properties that you really cannot study with conventional techniques. We are basically developing a tool set that is needed to probe local superconductivity in this type of materials. We are far away from that. Maybe not as far as I have thought till this morning. In Philip's talk, if I optimistically interpret his trace, it's so start onset is at 10 Kelvin. So these are sort of manageable temperatures, but still there are many challenges, and you have to use near field optics to make progress. So this is an image of conducting channels in small angle twisted bilayer graphene. You can see that these channels are maybe a few nanometers wide. The wavelength of light that is used to obtain this image in this scale would be of the size of this building. So in order to get insights into what is going on, you have to use new tools. This network of conducting channels that I will discuss in some days, these are reproducible results. In fact, we were not the first to see that. The first image comes from the group of Feng Guang, who has a paper primarily on domain walls in bilayer graphene. But in this paper, he has this stunning image of this network of triangular network of this conducting channels that he has reported back then, and now we observe the same behavior as well, and we try to make a step forward and try to quantify this response, and I will tell you how. So
before you get into this philosophy, so I guess, to get the superfluid density, you don't need near field, right? Does that make it any easier?
To get the superfluid density on a homogeneous superconductor, you don't need near field. To get a superfluid density on a superconductor that has these domains and domain walls, you absolutely have to.
I mean, there is some sort of local superfluid density that you're thinking of.
Well,
I think the more pertinent thing is the global superfluid density, which would be connected to response to a uniform field.
Well, It's okay. So
would that make
I don't know how far should we go to into philosophy, but it's not obvious that far field experiments give correctly yield the response function for these inhomogeneous materials, and you can get this superfluid density through this philosophical argument, provided you have a reliable response function measured over very broad frequency range. So what's going on here is a big question. So that's why we some time ago we started applying these near field methods, because we at the minimum we would like to understand what's going on in types of materials that we investigate with graphene and with many other types of other unconventional superconductors. So this is how this technique works. I don't know if I answered your question, Alan.
Oh, we can talk about it later.
So this technique is a hybrid of a light source and of a scanning probe. And the idea is that your scanning probe could be atomic force microscope, it could be STM. There are some differences, but perhaps not conceptual differences. And in this technique, you collect light just from the area underneath the stick. And the length scale is solely determined by the apex of this tip. So even with commercial tips that you can buy for modest amount, you get to the length scales of about 5 to 10 nanometers. The rest of the optical path is in free space. And so you can put any light source you want here. This could be a visible laser, this could be a terahertz or microwave source. And so you beat the diffraction by 3, 4, 5, 6 orders of magnitude, and you obtained raster scanned images of local optical contrast. So so that's how you can obtain images. But central to our idea of really quantifying the response of these conducting channels is the idea of plasmon polaritons that is supported by graphene. Yes, in our group, so we haven't invented this technique. This one of the pioneers is Fritz Keilmann in Munich. What we did, we added conditions that are essential to do condensed matter physics, including low temperatures and ultra-fast optical pulses. So I was really excited to see this onset at 10 Kelvin. So we can push that a little bit lower, and so maybe we sort of approach the regime when we can study superconductivity as well. So plasmon polaritons. This is an artist's view of a plasmon polariton on the surface of graphene. This is basically a ripple of electron density triggered with light. It's half matter, half light. And these are very, very interesting objects. They are very compact objects. Their wavelength is reduced compared to wavelength of light in free space by 2-3 orders of magnitude. So this is a very, very compact light. And they're interesting in their own right. They can form their own sort of condensates and superfluids. They can promote forbidden transitions because of this very high electric fields attendant with this confinement of light in these tiny, tiny modes. They can experience topological protection. They can do all sorts of wonders. And the idea that we tried to propose a few years back is that plasmon polaritons and other polaritons is actually a wonderful research tool. You can use them as a spectroscopy tool to study new physics of materials supporting these weights. And the idea is very simple. These plasmon polaritons and other types of polaritons, they are not static. They move. They can be launched by the tip of the near-field apparatus. And as they travel, these standing waves that they form on the surface of samples, or sometimes through the bulk of heterostructures, these images of these waves carry important insights that are very difficult to obtain with alternative techniques. So plasmon polaritons allow us to see what we cannot really see with other methods. So this is the outline of my talk. I will tell you how we learn physics from plasmon polaritons, and I will spend most of the time on this two-dimensional conducting channels that we find in low angle twisted bilayer graphene. This work is a collaboration with Philip Kim and his group, and all experiments have been done by Sai Sunku, a graduate student in our group. I'll also mention a few other types of Maurer patterns that we observe, including graphene on boron nitride and also boron nitride on boron nitride. And then, if time permits, I will tell you a little bit about ongoing work at Columbia in this area and open questions. So this is a one slide introduction to plasma polaritons. So an interface between negative dielectric function and positive dielectric function supports a propagating mode. All what you need to have is negative dielectric function, and Dirac electrons in graphene is a wonderful source for this dielectric function. So graphene is a fantastic plasmonic medium. Let's look at the dispersion of these of plasma polaritons in graphene. So at small k and at small omega, this dispersion starts just like a photon. But then it bends to the right of the photon line, and that's where you have this compact packets, these compact modes that are reduced compared to their wavelength is reduced compared to free space wavelength by as much as three orders of magnitude. Now, this dispersion is fully determined by the response functions of your material, that in general are not only frequency but also momentum dependent. So if you know that, you can reconstruct the dispersion. And I will show you that you can experimentally determine the dispersion by imaging these plasmon polariton waves. So that allows you to complete the loop. From imaging of these waves in real space, you determine the response function. That's how you learn physics of your new material. So in many ways, this is a new form of spectroscopy. Spectroscopy that's based not just on exploring colors of your material, of how much of one color is reflected or absorbed, but the spectroscopy is based on measurements in the real space, measurements of the interference patterns produced by these polaritonic waves. And we will harness this plasmon polariton wave to understand the response of conducting channels in bilayer graphene. There are many other polaritons, half matter, half light modes that van der Waals materials support. Phonon polaritons are extremely interesting in these layered materials. They travel in a very peculiar conical form through the bulk of the crystal, sort of similar to plasmas in some ways. And these phonon polaritons will help us to understand Maurer patterns in insulating van der Waals materials in boron nitride, for example. Alan, in his talk yesterday, excitant polaritons are another interesting object, and Alan has flashed this diagram of Maurer pattern in excitonic response of TMDs. There are really rich real space physics that he and his group predict. So this imaging is yet to be performed. This hasn't been done yet. So no one has been able to visualize real space features associated with Maurer modulations in the excitonic response of TMD materials. That's a challenge for everyone who is doing this type of experiments. My favorite polaritons are Cooper pair plasmon polaritons, and I prepared this diagram quite some time ago, and I used to show copper oxygen plane as a sort of a symbol of a medium supporting Cooper pair plasmon polaritons. I think I can change that now because thanks to Pablo's discovery. So, and eventually we hope that this form of polaritons will be imaged as well. These are the most interesting ones because they are fundamentally lossless. So the origin of the negative dielectric function for these polaritons is superfluid density. So there is no loss at all associated with superfluid density. For completeness, I'll mention magnetic polaritons that also exist. And there are again predictions by Xiaodong Su and Dick Xiao on Maurer behavior in magnetic van der Waals materials, these haven't been imaged yet. So this is future work. This is what we already have now, and that's what I will discuss. So how does this? We are really making progress in understanding these effects from our ability to image various forms of these polaritons in real space. How does imaging work? Well, it's actually quite straightforward. You start by turning on your infrared laser. You turn its frequency to match an interesting region of the dispersion where you have this compact mode, where you're away from the light cone. And then the tip of your near-field apparatus starts acting as a launching pad for this plasma polariton waves. The wavelength is solely determined by this dispersion. So the role of the tip here is to convert free space light into a high momentum mode, high polaritonic modes that can only travel on the surface. And so you can catch this polaritonic wave with another tip and send light to the detector. This is, in principle, doable, in practice, not very practical. And so what we proposed back in 2012 is that, in parallel with Frank Coppens, I should say, and Rainer Hillenbrand in Spain, so it's instructive to bounce this polaritonic wave off the edge of the crystal, and then you form a standing wave between the tip and the edge of your sample. And so in these experiments, plasmon polaritons behave as oscillations of this raster scanned image. So just as a side remark, I'll mention that plasmon polaritons can travel ballistically in high mobility device. This work is a collaboration with Corey Dean and Jim Holm, who have prepared high quality, high mobility structures. And when we cooled these down in a unique system built by Alex McLeod in our group, we were able to see that plasma polaritons travel for many microns in these high mobility samples. Okay, so now let's go to the Moiré patterns. I don't think I need to tell you to spend much time on this slide. Several different stacking orders. An important point here is that if graphene were to remain rigid, that's all what we would have. But graphene planes don't want to remain rigid. They want to reconstruct instead, at least at small angles. And they form these domains, A, B, and B, A domains, that have different contrast in this TEM image. And we see these domains very, very clearly in a raster-scanned non-infrared image. The wavelength of infrared light has been chosen here such that there are no traveling plasma polaritons yet. This is just local contrast. This is a landscape in which plasma polaritons travel. We have that fully under our control. And you see, and I can overlay this image with TEM results from Phillips group, and you see this identical domains in the two types of images. So our working hypothesis was that domains are perhaps not indistinguishable here, but domain walls seem to show much stronger contrast, seem to be show enhanced conductivity. And
do you remember what's the angle for this? It's 0.1 degrees in here?
So it's about 0.06 here.
0.06.
Yes. It's about 0.06 here. And right. I will show you actually the large area scan of this device. These devices that Philip provided to us is a gold mine for us. There are all sorts of angles there. So we really love this device. That will come later. So plasmon polaritons. So this is a cartoon of plasmon polaritons traveling in this kind of landscape. of conducting channels. This is a cartoon, but it's a telling cartoon, namely that the wavelength of these plasmon polaritons is actually comparable to the spacing between these conducting channels. And we anticipate to find interesting interference patterns, because plasmon polaritons can be reflected not just by physical edges of samples, but they can be reflected by local variations of the electronic conductivity. And that's a very interesting feature of plasmon polaritons. In fact, they can resolve atomic scale defects in materials, as we've demonstrated back in 2013. So in CVD samples, you have plenty of these domain walls that is really an atomic scale defect. But when plasmon travels and encounters this defect, there is a finite probability that it bounces back. And so in this raster scanned images, you see characteristic sort of fringes on both sides of this atomic scale defect. Feng Wang has brilliantly used that in biolithographing for the first time to visualize this domain walls, sparse domain walls, not networks yet, but he also has been able to probe conductivity along the domain walls. So the story of the conducting domain walls is actually a very interesting story, and it turns out that many, if not the most, contributors are here in this room. Started from Ivar Martin and his prediction for curiously biased homogeneous plane of graphene, where he proposed to apply opposite polarities, and this indeed has been observed before, and the chairperson of this session and Alan and Jin Mele have been able to find similarities between this situation and what is going on at the reconstructed domain wall. And Feng Wang actually has seen that in his transfer experiments. There is this paper that's on the archive from Philip and his group, who have been able through the ingenious analysis of transport measurements to essentially conclude the same, that this type of patterns is indeed taking place in this graphene.
Dimitri, maybe Philip mentioned this, but these domains are not seen near the magic angle, or like what happens to the size of these domains?
So the sizes of the as you increase the angle, the size of the domains is shrinking. Close to the magic angles, they will collapse to maybe something like 10 nanometers. And that goes to length scales that are of the order of our spatial resolution. So we have some data about this. We do not necessarily image them as clearly as in this plot. But together with Abhay Passopati, we are working on the STM version of this technique, and we are hoping to fill that void in the present instrumentation. So now we change the wavelength of infrared light, and we start launching this polaritonic waves. So each of these domain walls start reflecting polaritonic waves. And an interesting situation here is that it's a periodic pattern. So we expect to find curious and rich interference features that indeed are observed in this image on the left. We can change the wavelength of propagating plasmon polaritons, or we can modify the dispersion of graphene itself by applying the gate voltage, and then this pattern changes. And we studied that very, very systematically. And with my long-term collaborator in all of this, with Michael Fogler, actually Michael Fogler has been able to reproduce all subtle features of these images. And there is only one single input in his calculations, which is the conductivity of the domain wall. And it turns out that the conductivity domain wall of the domain wall is not just a free parameter. It's a very well defined. Let me tell you where it's coming from. So let's zoom at this domain wall. So we have A, B, and BA graphene on both sides of this domain wall. So we work with heavily gated graphene when we have plasmons in the first place. So then we also have the gap here that opens with the gate voltage. The Fermi energy here resides in one of the bands, and it turns out that at the domain wall, in addition, you have you have this curious chiral states filling the gap that comes directly from calculations of Jean Malley and Michael Fogler. And this additional state support many other transitions that ultimately enhance the conductivity at the domain walls. And that's the reason for this contrast, and plasmonic images have allowed us to reconstruct these conductivities very, very clearly. So these...
Pardon me. What is the frequency you're looking at compared to the distance between the Fermi level and the band bottom?
So the frequency is about 0.1 electron volt here. So it's probably of the order of the size of the gap, maybe slightly larger. So we have a range of frequencies in order to obtain this plasmonic images at different in this previous diagram. We used quite a bit of a range, but that's sort of the ballpark.
Don't you need an electric field for the gap, strictly speaking? You need to apply an electric field.
Yes, you apply the back gate voltage to the structure.
So you have an electric field.
Oh yeah, we have an electric field. Yeah, so the electric field is the cause of the finite Fermi energy and of this gap at the same time. So this is how this gold mine device looks like. It's a large device. It's most beautiful. So that's where these we call these periodic patterns as a photonic crystal, and that's because these networks of conducting channels act as a photonic crystal for plasmon polariton. So, but that's sort of a separate story. But there are other regions that we have in this device, so at these high angles we no longer resolve the domain walls. But there are other spectroscopic features that we can analyze, and we can extract this angle from certain features in the nano-infrared spectra that we obtain for all these regions separately. Sometimes plasmons reflect from this region between this region and that region, because there are different conductivities associated with these different angles. And by analyzing plasmonic waves, plasmonic oscillations at this interface, we can extract these numbers. Even if we zoom in, this is a large area scan in this photonic crystal part. So you see, I still think it's a beautiful image, but you see maybe a factor of two variation in the wavelength in the periodicity of this conducting channel. So that's probably that's the story of this device. Every device, I think, is different. Has its own character, and these nano-optical techniques allow us to quantify. So that was the story of graphene on graphene. Very similar things happen when you put boron graphene on boron nitride. So in this case, there's a lattice mismatch, as you know. Because of this lattice mismatch, even at perfect alignment of the two layers, the periodicity is about 15 nanometers. So this is at the edge of the spatial resolution of this probe. But there are other effects. They connect. So in this sample, there is an area where we have this Mora pattern. We can resolve it with AFM, and there is area where we have plane graphene. And there is a domain wall between these two areas, and there are plasmonic features associated with these domain walls. That's because
what does plane graphene mean?
Not rippled, not moiré.
Large twist angle.
Yeah.
Large twist
angle.
Okay.
So not registering boron nitride in this
floating, really.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Okay, yeah, so you can use your favorite terminology. So this is moiré, this is not. So, and they have different conductivities. And because there is different conductivities, there are these plasmonic reflections happening that Guan Qingyi, a postdoc in our group, has imaged back in 2015. So by analyzing samples at different doping in this case, he has been able to reconstruct, with help of Michael Fogler, he has been able to reconstruct the electronic structure of graphene on boron nitride. So this is a still unpublished result. So in fact, unsubmitted results, so maybe you should do it soon. So this is a moiré pattern in twisted boron nitride itself. Gigantic length scale, about half a micron. So boron nitride is an insulator, as everybody knows here. So this contrast has nothing to do with the electronic conductivity, but it has a lot to do with this local properties of phonon polaritons, very interesting lattice polaritons that this crystal supports. So that brings me to ongoing work and to unresolved issues. And this is another fantastic development that Corey had maybe 30 seconds to describe in his talk. Corey proposed a very elegant device architecture where he can rotate this handle of, in this case, it could be a graphite or could be a boron nitride in a crossbar device, and he can continuously vary the the angle between these two layers, and he can, with the help of an AFM tip, he can dial any sort of band structure that he wants. And we closely collaborate with his group, and all elements of this elegant design are consistent with what the type of hardware we have in our nano-optical system. So we are beginning to work with these devices controlling. We are trying to control the propagation of plasmon polaritons along these channels with this rotating knob. So now a few open questions and type of experiments that we are trying to do, but we haven't succeeded yet. And this is a collaboration again with many people in the room and at Columbia, and also with Seattle Sioux and Dick Xiao and Michael Fogler, of course. Jin Melly is here, Tony Low. So it's going to be, I think, very, very interesting to try to investigate transport of plasmons along these domain walls. We know how to do it, so we can easily put plasmonic launches, which could be a piece of gold that actually can move on the sample surface and direct it to the area where you want it. And then maybe you could study propagation of plasmons along these domain walls and probe the optical conductivity associated with these channels that's predicted to be, I don't know if lossless, but at least losses are supposed to be reduced in these domain walls. This hasn't been done yet. In order to do this experiment, you have to be able to independently control the gap and the Fermi energy. You would like to open the Fermi, the gap, and put the Fermi energy in the middle of the gap. That implies the existing transport. People have solved this problem, of course, by adding a top gate. But it's very, very difficult to do non-infrared imaging through a top gate. So you really want this. After all, we are dealing with evanescent fields that are rapidly decaying away from where they originate from, and we are making slow progress with that, but it's still an unresolved problem. I already.
Do you know if the domain walls in the BN case are conductive?
Domain walls in BN are not conductive, but they have different phonon properties. they have a different frequency of the phonon mode. They have different width of the phonon peak that's consistent sort of with reconstructed character of boron nitride at this domain wall. But we are confident that they absolutely non-conductive. It would have been nice to have them conductive, but they're not conductive. Excitant polarizons have, again, in moiré structures, they have not been imaged yet. So there are several papers now reporting elements of moiré physics in excitant excitonic behavior. There will be one by Seodong Su, and I think there is another one from Austin, and maybe there are more coming. But direct imaging has not been done. It's surprisingly it's a much more difficult experiment. So I always thought that doing things in the visible range is easier. Actually, it's other way around in this near field properties. Then there are extremely rich transient phenomena that one can study with the help of polaritonic waves. Again, this crossbar geometry is a very useful geometry, and we are trying to do this. We've learned how to probe propagating plasma polaritons in the setting of a pump probe experiment, when you can study dynamics at femtosecond timescales. Light here is not just a probe of what's going on. Light can alter the electronic structure of graphene, as you know, and we are hoping to investigate this effect by passing plasmonic waves through the region where photo excitation is happening. So I've mentioned already superconductivity. I've started superconductivity in order to probe local superfluid density. You have to operate in terahertz frequencies. We have built a system like this that works with terahertz lasers. That's that part we have solved. Our temperatures are not in one Kelvin range. And again, so that's what I wrote, I think, yesterday before I saw Philip's results. I think we are kind of getting close. So maybe just maybe another year. So how about that? So and this will be a very, very good experiment. So experiments with this inoperando devices that Corey Dean has invented are extremely, extremely valuable, and we already see some hints of controlling plasma propagation with this rotating disks. So let me summarize.
8 minutes.
8 minutes. Great. I'd like to use that for questions. So this talk was about twisted bilayer graphene and optical experiments on twisted bilayer graphene. So our key tool here is plasmon polaritons, these hybrids of light and matter that we harnessed to do a new form spectroscopy based on measurements in the real space. These experiments allow us to look into the story of conducting channels in bilayer graphene at small angles, and the story of these conducting channels is about the gap, about new states appearing within the band gap of graphene band structure. With these experiments, I think we have barely scratched the surface of what nano-optical techniques can do in graphene and condensed matter physics in general. We are beginning to rethink what we can do next, reimagine what type of experiments we can perform, what kind of materials we can study. So thank you very much for your attention. This is a photograph of those who did the experiments.
Have you ever looked at these moiré as a function of temperature at high temperatures? So that's the capability that you have?
This is actually a high temperature image. So we've looked at them at low temperatures as well.
Is it the same?
So this pattern stays the same. So it doesn't. So lots of things, of course, can happen between ambient and 10 Kelvin. Contraction is very different. So the pattern, we didn't see any changes in the periodicity of the pattern. So we would like to redo this as far as electronic properties are concerned. So this device is such that it's properties are not very temperature dependent. We would like to redo this type of experiments on really, really high mobility device where there will be more variation with temperature, and that way we will gain access to perhaps, you know.
So that's room temperature, that measurement?
This is a room temperature measurement, yeah.
Do you have density control?
Yes, but only back gate.
Only back gate. And is this with BN on top, or is this just the top is just the back gate?
There is a BN on top. So there is a BN on top, but there is no BN on the bottom in this particular device. That's why mobility is
so silicon oxide on the bottom?
Yeah.
Silicon nitride.
Okay, sorry.
Because you want to compare with the PN.
Yeah.
So this figure shows these domain walls being more conducting, of course, but can you make a quantitative comparison with that kind of the two right movers?
We've made this quantitative comparison and the machinery and the theory for this analysis in this nanoletter paper in collaboration with Jen Melly and Michael Fogler, and the agreement is very, very good. There are also if you really zoom here, there is a pattern around this domain wall that we can see in some of the imaging experiments at certain frequencies, and the agreement is good.
So I should think of this conducting region as literally being these two channels, these two right movers. Are they more states? Or?
So with the caveat that the Fermi energy is actually here. So it's a mix of the band conduction and this, and the contribution of this is frankly fairly modest in this imaging data.
So that if there is a color bar on this image, what would it tell us about blue versus yellow? I think
it's yellow is maybe 10% higher than blue.
Ah.
So that's why our dream structure would be such that would allow the Fermi energy here, and so we are working extremely hard on that. It hasn't happened yet, so that requires another metallic layer on top, and doing again evanescent field measurements through another metal is a little bit. I think it's doable, but we haven't done it yet.
So
if you put the doping to zero, do the channels go away then?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then they only appear this 10% variation.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that occurs even at room temperature, when you're a small gap compared to KT.
Gap is about 0.1 volt, so it's larger than KT.
Okay. 0.1 volt?
0.1 volt.
That must be a large structure selecting.
Yeah, you can, it's a gated structure, you can apply very, very high electric fields, yeah.
It's still 0.1 volt. That's a large transverse electric field.
It's within the reach for the regular back gated device.
Any other questions?
What is the size of Fermi energy compared to 0.1 volt?
I have all these numbers. It's a little higher. Yeah.
People see numbers.
Right. Let's thank Dmitry again and all the speakers.